So welcome to my talk. I entitled it Towards an Optical Galvanic Sensor for Trace Gases. And yeah, as this is kind of a sensing session, I think this works quite well. It's work we're doing in Stuttgart. It's Tillmann's Faust group. And on the other hand, in this audience, I also thought it could be a good idea to entitle the talk Optical Galvanic Detection of Continuous Wave Rydberg Excitations in Thermal Nitric Oxide. So the difference, of course, is just a little bit the focus you have on what you're really trying to tell the people. But I will go with the motivation for the trace gas sensor. And that's definitely a medical application. So what we want to do, or what we propose this detection scheme to be used for, is a breath gas analysis. And nowadays, this is a common method. You can just have an example picture here, someone being at a medical facility and that's the question, what can we really detect? So why are we interested in nitric oxide as an, let's say, medical application? And the thing is pretty simple, nitric oxide is signaling inflammations. And one of the major inflammations of your lung is asthma. And also it's important for blood pressure regulation, for your immune system, and this happens in human and in other specimens. So all mammals use NO for the same medical reasons. And but as you can already see, there are devices. So what do we think we can do better than what's already on the table there? And roughly, to give you an estimate, what we need to detect is 1 to 2,000 parts per billion just in number of molecules in the exhaled gas. This is a challenge, but it's not impossible. It's also not impossible for these things. But if you think of medical research, this is mostly happening with these guys. And they provide way less of gas you can analyze than what a human usually does. And therefore, we have to deal with way less gas volumes than what this machine can actually deal with. And as we were already discussing that, let's go a little bit back to the physics. And as Daniel is here, let's highlight our last work together. So what you can see here is just a comparison between, on the left side, each time an optical detection, it's EIT detection as proposed for the Rydberg sensor and everything. And then, as a direct comparison, the detection of this galvanic sensor. So you have your Rydberg excitation, you ionize the Rydberg atoms in this case, you just drain the current and really count electrons or measure currents. And you can see that at least for thermal vapors, you get a significant improvement in signal to noise, or on the right hand, in readout speed. And that is more or less the motivation for our gas sensor. Let's just apply this to the NO sensing. So what's the sensing principle? It's pretty straightforward. Just take your gas sample, even in a through-flow configuration. In our case, let's do a three-photon excitation. We get our Rydberg state here. We use the background gas. We use everything that's around for collisions. This is far enough energy to ionize our Rydberg states. And then we can just use an applied voltage to separate the charges and measure the current. So if we really want to go for a gas sensor, what do we really need to make it useful, to make it maybe accurate and so on? Well, in principle, what we need is, as much as possible about the involved states. The more we know, the more we can estimate what we should get. And knowing that, one of the main challenges is optimizing the excitation path. We want to be as efficient as possible in creating Rydberg atoms here. Yeah, and how do we do this? Well, we focus on different steps, and our first experimental setup should be, something everyone in the room has probably seen before. This is just a saturated absorption spectroscopy setup. We start with a UV laser here. It's the Doppler-free setup in the cell. The thumb's too thick, apparently. Okay, so what we've got, a UV laser. We use for the pump beam something like 4 milliwatts. We use 0.4 milliwatts for the probe beam. And in our cell, we've got a pressure of 0.02 millibar, roughly. So we are far above what usually is used in whatever these Rydberg sensor cells. We already have a significant background pressure that provides us with, a reasonable amount of collisions so that we get a decent ionization in there. But also for the measurements we're doing here, we kept this pressure in the same range at least. So we've got to do some power stabilization for the laser. That's something. Well, I don't want to go talk about details about the laser, especially the features we didn't order. But I think it's known to the community, or at least some, what I'm talking about. We have to do lock-in detection for that. And with that one, as we have to scan rather slowly, we use a reference cavity locked to a side fringe generated with an EOM, and therefore can provide pretty stable scan basis. And with that one, what are we really looking at? So this is, again, our excitation scheme. So all I'm talking about is the lower transition so far. And in comparison to atoms, it looks a little bit more complicated. So you've got way more lines, but they, as you can see here, they split up in groups. And these are just different transitions between rotational states and whatsoever. But what you can do, you can just zoom in on, for example, the one all the way here on the right. We just chose that one as we are kind of beginners with molecules. That was the one where we are absolutely sure we could identify, and that's why we decided to start out there. And if you then go a little bit further in, look at one of these lines, then what you would expect is that you've got the two total angular momentums. They're coupled. We're going from the ground state, which is a pi state, up to the A state, which is a sigma state. So we remove one angular momentum for the electron. We get the transitions that are, in principle available. There are six of them. But if you look a little bit into the theory, you will just notice that, looking into the theory, I should be a little bit more precise. There is a tool that's called pGopher that's used for many of the molecular calculations. You just stick in your molecular constants, and you end up with the spectrum, including line intensities and everything. So you can really get the fine and hyperfine structure out of it and get the full spectrum. So in our case, this is the six lines again for one transition between two total angular momenta. And these are the six. And if you look at it, three of them are rather weak. And for us, this means we're just not going to see them. They are roughly weaker than the other three ones by a factor of 100. So, and with this knowledge, what we can do is, we can retrieve the splitting, so just the energy difference between these from theory, and if we then take our measurements we did for different angular momenta, then you can see for the high ones we have a quite nice, well separate splitting, but as you can already see, the signal is not as good as it is for the line in between where we have the lower angular momentum. The reason is just, these states have to be populated thermally, and that's just a distribution, and not all of them are as well populated as we would wish for this measurement. But we can fit the line position, we can extract it, and then we can just condense it in a plot I'm going to show later. But more importantly, note that if we go to low Js, then the line width is larger than splitting. We can't actually resolve them directly all the way down to the Jx 1.5, where at least with our resolution, it appears to be one single line. But nevertheless, we can compile it, we can put it in one graph where you can just see the splitting between the two lines on the right as the purple, as the purple graphs or the purple points in here, and the cyan or greenish ones are the two splittings on the left. And as I said, you can do the theoretical description via empirical constants. This is the rotational constant, that's a vibrational constant, not relevant for that one. But just to give you an example, what we are talking about, you feed these constants into Pigover again. They are pretty well known due to RF spectroscopy and a lot of work that has been done on NO, long time ago even. They're well known for the ground state, but for the A state, for the excited state, they're not as well known. But what we can do is we can just go ahead, fit them, and extract our own set of constants. And of course, for the fitting, we left out the lowest three data points as fitting splitting, if there is no splitting, is pretty hard, so we didn't do it. And as I already said, we completely relied on this software called Pigover. And doing that, we ended up with a set of constants that essentially doesn't improve the knowledge about NO really by orders of magnitude. But for us, it's a good sign that we were doing things right, that we're understanding our system, that we think we can claim that we know what you're doing if we want to do an excitation in our thermal vapors. And the natural question is, can we do better? This is one of the spectra we used for fitting. So this is exactly where the left and the middle peaks start to overlap. And what's the problem? And the first thing we did is, is it better if we would lower the pressure? Can we get more spectral resolution with less gas pressure in our cell? And the short answer is yes, we can. Unfortunately, the signal to noise goes down. So we can clearly see we get a little bit more structure if we reduce the pressure, but signal to noise becomes an issue for these measurements, and especially this is one of the stronger lines we had. So with these pressures, we can't cover the whole range we were able to cover before, and therefore fitting constants or anything like this wouldn't be as reliable as the other approach. But putting our calculated positions in the graph at least confirms that the lines are where we would expect them to be. And again, this makes us confident that we're not doing something absolutely wrong. Our actual goal, or what's really important for our gas sensor, is at some point we should extract saturation intensities, we should really get more information about the transitions. But our conclusion is, that's a little bit more work for the students. We really have to improve our detection scheme, at least the optical absorption detection on the ground state, to really be able to extract information about that, at least for the ground state transition. So, but what I already told you, we are not only interested in the ground state transition. What we're really interested in is the Rydberg excitation. And given that, let's put kind of a check mark on the lowest transition and focus on what we are really building. What does our cell look like? So as we are really heading towards a sensor, what we are building is already smaller than the standard vacuum chamber you're used to. We're really this size, fully integrated electrical amplifiers. The laser beams pass through the cell from this side. This is the whole setup, except for the lasers, of course. We're still in the tabletop stage, but as you can see, the dominant part in our setup are the measurements for the pressure, not the cell itself, just to give you an impression how far we got in shrinking things, at least so far. So laser beams, by the way, are all passing through on this axis here. And yeah, if we look at the current signal, as I was already told, I'm a little bit late, I should hurry up. I'll just summarize. We see an increase of current if we increase the lasers, so the Rabi frequencies. And as you can clearly see, the ground state has a loss, low ionization cross-section. It increases the higher we go with our excitation levels, so that we end up in the nanoamps here. We can also see that for the ground state, we can clearly see an increase if we extract the charges with higher voltages. And for the pressure, we see a maximum if we increase the pressure and then see a decrease, which we attribute to additional collisions. Also the charge extraction, of course, heavily depends on the free path for the electrons and the remaining ions. And the only thing I didn't point at is the lowest one here. There we can already see a decrease in current signal once we increase the voltage we apply to our field plates. And the simple reason for that is actually one of the nice things we've been looking at. Just to give you a number, right now we're somehow in a range of a quantum efficiency to 10 to the in the range of 10 to the minus 5. So that means we can excite one Rydberg molecule out of 10 to the 5 molecules distributed over all velocity classes, over all internal states in the ground state. So we're doing not too bad, but still, let's discuss this curve, or I think the answer is pretty clear what we're seeing. It's just a Stark effect. We don't adjust the frequency of our lasers, and therefore we move the atoms or the molecules out of resonance with our lasers, and therefore, of course, we lose in excitation efficiency. But if we do this with the scanning, and everything, we can really get a Stark map. So far, this is also preliminary data. We definitely have to work a little bit on the quality of it. You can see only the non-shifting line here is a really narrow line. All others get broadened and so on, which is an indication that we might have inhomogeneous fields in the cell due to charges we generate and so on. So there's a lot of work left to optimize the detection here. But in principle, it is possible. And therefore, let me just summarize. So we have to do the star shift measurements, we have to put state labels on all the lines you were seeing there. And of course, at some point, we have to look at the original idea and have the NO mixed with other gases, and maybe at some point really use a first human breath sample. We have to optimize the detection efficiency, the signal-to-noise ratio, and especially the broadening and things. And this is modulation lock-in on the other lasers. And once we are done with that, we hope to be able to support or do measurements that were proposed yesterday. And with that, yeah, that's the team. I'm late, so yeah. Thanks for your attention.
We have time for one question.
So, Harold, in your spectrum of the transition to the A state at lower pressure, the resolution improved, but also there were shoulders on the right-hand side.
That's exactly where there is this preliminary.
Okay.
Yeah, we have to look into it. Some people might know that during the whole run of the project so far, we had problems with our ground state laser. It might be that it wasn't running single mode. It might be something happening there. We just have to repeat some of these measurements just to confirm whether it's really there or, yeah, if it is just a laser artifact.
Okay, let's move on. Let's thank Harold again.